Rating American presidents is one of our favorite pastimes, and whether we're amateurs or professionals, the results are usually the same. George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, and Franklin Roosevelt always head the list. But have you ever tried to compile a list of our worst presidents? Our guest today has. His name is Nathan Miller, and he's the author of Stars Spangled Men, America's 10 Worst Presidents, a book that's bound to spark some debate, much humor, and no doubt at least a little outrage. Nathan Miller, formerly an award-winning reporter for the Baltimore Sun, is the author of 14 books of history and biography, for which he's been nominated 5 times for a Pulitzer Prize. Welcome, Mr. Miller, and thank you for joining us.
I'm glad to be here, Brian.
Just how did you go about selecting your list of the 10 worst presidents? What criteria did you use?
First of all, the qualities for a great or a good president are pragmatism, strong character, vision, political skill, a basic integrity, and the ability to communicate with the American public. So therefore, the qualities for a poor president are a mirror image. Bad character, the inability to compromise, a lack of vision, poor political skills, dishonesty, and an inability to communicate.
So it might be that they either did something bad or did nothing at all.
That's correct. In most cases, it's a failure of character. I mean, Heraclitus, the Greek philosopher, once said, poor political skills, dishonesty, and an inability to communicate.
So it might be that they either did something bad or did nothing at all.
That's correct. In most cases, it's a failure of character. I mean, Heraclitus, the Greek philosopher, once said, character is fate. And in some of these men, character was fate.
Okay. Well, we're not going to have time to go through the entire list, or at least to talk about them at great length, although we'll want to mention them all. But let's start sort of at the top of the list, or the bottom, depending on how you look at it. Your number one, which is to say the best of the worst, and that's Jimmy Carter. Why'd you choose him?
Well, Jimmy Carter is a classic example of a man who knew how to run for president, how to be elected president, but didn't know how to be president once he got the job. A lot of people have objected to my inclusion of Carter in this list. They point to his post-presidential career. I grant you that Carter is probably one of the better men we ever had as an ex-president, but that does not mitigate his presidential term, which is something of a disaster. I think that when he left office, the inflation rate was higher than his popularity rating.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have a little rejoinder next to Jimmy Carter, you say, who showed that the White House is not the place for on-the-job training, which I think you've just explained. But for your second person on the list, William Howard Taft, you say he got so fat that he got stuck in a White House bathtub. Is that why he made your list?
Sort of an amusing incident in Taft's career, but that's not why he's on the list. He's on the list primarily because he serves as a trough between two near-great presidents, Theodore Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson. The country was in a progressive mood, a liberal mood. Taft was very much a conservative. He did not reflect the needs or wishes of the nation at the time, and he failed as a president.
Is it important, do you think, just as an aside, that in order to be a good president, that you have to reflect sort of the interests and the will of the people?
No, one should be a leader. One should show leadership in the presidency. A perfect example of leadership, of course, is Franklin Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm.
The country was in the throes of the Great Depression, and he mobilized the country. Roosevelt, of course, did not end the Great Depression. World War II did that, but he at least gave the country a sense of mission. Ronald Reagan, who's not on my list, a number of people object to the fact that he's not on my list, also had a sense of mission and leadership.
Okay.
People may not have liked what Ronald Reagan led the nation, but he did have a sense of where he wanted to go.
Okay, good. Well, now, Benjamin Harrison is number three, and you write, he looked like a medieval gnome and had a handshake like a wilted petunia.
Yes, he was very much a nonentity. He was elected primarily because he was the grandson of William Henry Harrison, the previous president. Incidentally, William Henry Harrison died a month after giving his inaugural speech. Benjamin Harrison served 4 years, and he probably accomplished just about as much in his 4 years as his grandfather had accomplished in 1 month.
You have no mercy. Okay, now Calvin Coolidge, your number four, says who?
Calvin Coolidge is sort of an amusing case. He succeeded Warren Gamaliel Harding, who's much further down on my list. And Coolidge's policy was to do absolutely nothing. He sat in a rocking chair on the White House lawn and smoked 50-cent cigars while the stock market shot out of all proportion, just as we're having today, a great sense of speculation. People were getting rich overnight. Coolidge did nothing to head off the danger, and immediately after he left office, of course, the bottom dropped out with the Great Depression, and Herbert Hoover, who had been Secretary of Commerce under Coolidge and had been warning that something was going to happen if something was not done, bore the brunt of the blame for the Great Depression, although he was really not to blame for it.
So maybe his platform of keeping cool with Coolidge didn't do the country any great service.
No, it did not. They should have a more activist presidency would have probably served the country much better at the time.
Right, and I love, for the benefit of the listeners here, your rejoinder to Coolidge, which says he was the living embodiment of Woody Allen's observation that 80% of success is showing up.
Yes, he showed up, and that's about it.
Okay, number five, Ulysses S. Grant, who proves that old soldiers should fade away rather than go to the White House.
Yes, Grant, of course, is a tragic case. Grant had been a great soldier. He had won the Civil War. He had been rewarded with the presidency, and he was another man who did not know how to be president once he got the job. In fact, he never voted in an election except in one case, and he was a Republican candidate and Republican president, and he had voted for a Democrat the only time that he ever voted for the presidency. He had no idea of how to be president. He was surrounded by men who were scallywags and crooks, and they proceeded to strip away the dome of the Capitol.
So perhaps here a man who just simply couldn't control or even deal with what was going on around him.
Right, and he had no interest in being president.
Okay.
He wanted the job to be president. He wanted the honor, but he had no interest in being president.
Now, number six, we come to the first person who perhaps was most obvious on or most likely to be included on most people's list because he was the first president to be impeached, Andrew Johnson. Tell us about him a bit.
Well, Johnson's a classic case of a man who lacked the temperament to be president. He was an angry man. He could not stand criticism. His policy was a failure. His policy was to bring to restore the Democratic leadership in the South that had led the South to the war. He hoped to use these people to get himself reelected as president in 1868. I might jump back a bit. So he'd come to the presidency in 1865 after the assassination of Abraham Lincoln, and he had no political following of his own as a vice president, and he wanted to build a political machine, and he thought he could build it in the South. But of course, in doing that, he sacrificed the rights of the freed slaves.
Now, many people think that he was framed. They look at impeachment and see it as strictly a political action. You agree with that?
Yes, impeachments are political. Politics is politics. I mean, Clinton's impeachment was politics. Johnson's was politics. But in Johnson's case, I think that the grounds were more solid for the impeachment process.
Okay. Number seven, Franklin Pierce.
Franklin Pierce and James Buchanan, who are the two next two presidents, really, on my list, are complete nonentities. The country was heading for a breakup in the Civil War. These two men served as presidents before the Civil War. They had no idea of how to govern, what to do, how to bind up the differences in the nation, and they exacerbated by their failures the situation and made the conflict irrepressible.
Now, you wrote of Franklin Pierce, there's nothing left but to get drunk, quote-unquote, after being denied renomination and promptly did so. Was he noted for his drinking? Or?
He was, as one writer said, a veteran of innumerable losing battles with the bottle.
Now, you mentioned Buchanan already, but what's the reference here to being on the government payroll for 40 years and never having an original idea?
Well, he had been everything from congressman to secretary of state to minister to Britain, and a party wheel horse primarily, without ideas, without imagination. And some writers claim that he was the nation's only gay president.
Oh, really?
There's no proof of this, of course. Mm-hmm. He was a bachelor, and there's no proof, but he is sometimes cited as that. In fact, some gay people do cite him as a gay president. I remember Barney Frank, the congressman from Massachusetts, who was avowedly gay, has cited Buchanan as a gay president.
Do you? I think those who might contend with you here might ask, well, could Buchanan really have stopped or headed off the Civil War?
No, he might not have headed off the Civil War, but he might have done more to prevent it from happening.
Well, you have a phrase here that comes close to an idea you just mentioned, Warren Harding, who gave being in the closet a new meaning.
Yes, poor Harding. Harding was another nonentity elected to the presidency in 1920 after the end of World War One. People had revolted against progressivism. They revolted against internationalism, as espoused by Woodrow Wilson, the League of Nations. People just wanted to be left alone, and Harding sort of epitomized this idea of laissez-faire, get along, let go along. And he was a small-town Ohio editor without ideas, and he brought a group of friends with him from Ohio who proceeded to loot the treasury. Harding is reputed to have had a young girlfriend, which he brought into the White House. There's no proof of this either, except her statements.
And
she really never wrote a book about it.
Right.
And she claimed to have had assignations with him in a closet off the Oval Office.
So the reference to closet is a little bit different from how we might apply it to rumors about Buchanan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I suppose we should have a drum roll here, but in absence of that, we get to the bottom or the top of the list, depending on how you want to look at it. You are worst president of all time, and I'm sure there's going to be some screaming about this, but you pick Richard Milhouse Nixon.
Yes. In fact, I sometimes have doubts in my own mind whether Nixon belongs on this. Nixon was a very able man, one of the more intelligent men to become president. He really had a lot of accomplishments in his presidency. And particularly in the field of foreign policy, his agreements with the Russians, his opening towards China, and I think probably history will probably treat Nixon much kinder than we do today. But he is the author of Watergate. He did try to make off with the Constitution, and he is the only president forced to resign because of his crimes. And if Gerald Ford had not pardoned him, he might well have stood the chance of going to jail.
Do you think the public in the future will see him differently from historians?
I think possibly the people will look more kindly upon Nixon. Mm-hmm. In fact, I'm almost convinced of it. I think this happens. Political reputations, presidential reputations go up and down. Franklin Roosevelt's reputation went down after World War II when people were dissatisfied with the Yalta settlement. Of course, it swung the other way now and it's way up. I think a president whose reputation is really undergoing change now is Lyndon Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
At the time he left office, his reputation was way down because of the Vietnam War. But further and further we get away from Vietnam, people are beginning to see the other accomplishments of the Johnson years, and his reputation is starting to go up.
Okay. Now, presidents that are ordinarily listed near the bottom of ratings, like John Tyler and Millard Fillmore, are both missing from your list.
Yes.
Why did you leave them off?
I looked at them and I thought these were obvious candidates because they're always on the list of worst presidents as conventional wisdom. And then I looked at them and I decided they really weren't so bad. Both men were vice presidents who came to office after the deaths of their predecessors. In fact, John Tyler was the first vice president to come to office after the death of his predecessor, and he had a long-running battle with Congress over whether he was really the president or not. And he did manage to accomplish a few things. He managed to bring about the annexation of Texas and the settlement of a very serious border problem with the British over the border with Canada, and therefore I thought under those circumstances he did not belong on this list. In the case of Fillmore, he helped bring about the Compromise of 1850, which stemmed off the Civil War for 10 years, and I thought, therefore, that he shouldn't be on this list.
Okay. Well, finally, I shouldn't let you go without giving you a chance to look ahead a bit for the next edition of the 10 Worst Presidents. Will Bill Clinton be on the list?
Well, I'm sorely tempted. In the paperback version of the book, I have an essay on Clinton. I originally wrote the book, of course, before the Monica Lewinsky affair. And I wrote, the paperback came out during the affair, and I had to reassess Clinton. I originally had given him a free ride because he was the incumbent. But I've had to take a new look at him, and I would say this. I don't think that Clinton belongs on a list of 10 worst presidents on the basis of what he's accomplished. He's had a few successes, more failures than successes, but I don't think he belongs on this list. However, his character is so poor, and the contumely that he has cast upon the presidency and the picture that he has created of the presidency in the public mind, the betrayal of the public, I would possibly make him a candidate for it, and I think that I don't think, therefore, that his standing among presidents will be very high, although he may not be on this list of bottom feeders.
And the bottom feeders, I like the phrase. Do you think that it will make a difference as the public versus historians view him?
I think that the public and the historians both agree now on Clinton, that it's a sad failure. It's a tragedy in its own way. He was a man who had the portents of greatness, who came to power at a time when people wanted change. He had the intelligence to do these things and just failed because he was an adolescent.
Okay, well, we'll have to leave it at that. Thank you, Mr. Miller, for a most amusing and provocative book and talk.
Thank you very much.
I hope you'll join us again soon.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Nathan Miller, author of Star Spangled Men, America's 10 Worst Presidents, published by Touchstone Books, a division of Simon & Schuster. And this is Talking History.
George Washington was the first, you see. He once chopped down a cherry tree. President number two would be John Adams, and then number three. Tom Jefferson stayed up to write the Constitution late at night. So he and his wife had a great big fight, and she made him sleep on the couch all night. James Madison never had a son, and he fought the war of 1812. James Monroe's colossal nose was bigger than Pinocchio. John Quincy Adams was number six, and it's Andrew Jackson's butt he kicks. So Jackson learns to play politics next time he's the one that the country picks. Martin Van Buren, number eight, for a one-term shot as chief of state. William Harrison, how do you praise? That guy was dead in 30 days.
John Tyler, he liked country folk,
and after him came President Polk.
Zachary Taylor liked to smoke. His breath killed friends whenever he spoke.